CMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined today with my good friend, Mr. Vin Forte. There's no on button.
Oh, there is no on button. Oh, you got new mics.
It's always on.
It's always on. I'm listening.
Yeah, I had them last time. Remember, I told you that it was $20 more for on buttons.
Oh, that's right. $20 more for an on button.
I know, and I was like...
You're just going to turn it on anyway.
I know. Like, I was like, well, it's already on. Well, welcome to PCMC. I'm so glad to see you, Vin. How are you?
Good. I know we're talking sci-fi today, but I could not be farther from sci-fi lately because, you know, I've been binging on Paramount Plus.
What?
Frasier.
Frasier? That's pretty sci-fi, though. I don't know. You know, it's so funny because for some reason I've been thinking about Frasier lately. I've never watched Frasier.
It's really sharp.
But I feel like there's all of these reappraisals lately of like, oh, no, Frasier's better than Cheers. Like, Frasier's the best spinoff ever.
I would say, I don't know about best spinoff ever, but it's up there. Like, it's just really sharp writing. Like, you know when you're watching something, you're just like, that's clever.
Yeah.
Like, that's clever. Like, cool. Everything just, each plot ties together with a nice little bow. It's really good.
I really like the episode where he falls off the stage. And he's like, oh, my, I'm hurt. Oh, I'm hurt. And you know, of course, you know, I love him in Boss.
Oh, well, who doesn't love him in Boss? Who doesn't love him in Gary the Rat?
Who doesn't love him in all his weird conservative movies? It's so funny when he became, oh, we found out he was conservative. I was like,
because you don't think Frasier conservative.
Right. You also think like, oh, he's smart. But it's like, no, it's just that accent. It's that faux accent. It's like not even an accent. It's like a faux European accent.
It's like, what, you thought because I go to the theater that I'm not conservative?
Yeah. Clearly, you don't know that was a character I played.
Right. It was clearly a character I played. It's like, what? You're an actor?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's almost like he's some kind of actor.
Yeah. So Paramount Plus is a... you know what? Unlike Disney Plus, where I was like, day one, we got to get it. And it was like a few cool things, and then I rarely go to it.
Paramount Plus is the reverse.
Paramount Plus was like, all right, I guess we'll get it. But then it's just like, the more I look at it, it's like, oh, okay, you've got this.
They do a poor job of letting you know what their back catalog is. They do a decent job of being like, they let you know what their jewels are. You're going to get all the Star Trek. You're going to get, you know, whatever new movies that they come out
with. A lot
of
Nickelodeon shit.
A lot of Nickelodeon stuff. Yeah, like any new movies that Paramount puts out, like, you know, you're going to get. But, like, I thought, like, that Frasier would have been on Peacock.
Right.
But I just saw it there one day. I'm like, oh, I'll watch some Frasier.
Right,
like, oh,
exactly.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of these services, like, they try to promote, like, the things that they're giving you.
Right.
Like, the newer things, like, oh, we've got a new Beavis and Butthead movie, or how about this? So, like, when it comes to that stuff, Paramount Plus is lacking, but they've got a good back catalog that, like, you don't see that much anymore.
And they should
anymore.
Really promote it, because you know what? Like, if I wanted to watch Frasier any other way, that show has 11 seasons.
Yeah.
Like, if I wanted to seek out and get, like, all the box sets, now we're talking, like, plus $100-something.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Whereas Paramount Plus, I could just pay, you know, like $9.99 a month.
Yeah.
We're sponsored by Paramount Plus now.
Oh, yeah, just, yeah. You should know that.
We got to cut that sweet Paramount Plus money.
Yeah.
That sweet CBS All Access coin.
Here's what today's actual topic is. And they know this because they read the description.
Yeah.
Today we're talking about underrated sci-fi movies.
Ooh.
Me and Vin both have a list of 5 each. You put that together, we've got 10.
Yeah, that's how that works.
I also have a few honorable mentions because I always want to sneak some in there. And some of my honorable mentions are, I'm sure, will aggravate some people. So looking at my list, it's really interesting. I have three movies from the 90s.
I have two movies from the same director.
I have, interesting, I have two movies from 1 year.
Okay.
And then I have one from the 70s and one from the 2010s.
Yeah, how many do I have? I've got 5, but I've got one from the 2010s, one from the 80s, two from the early 90s, one from the 70s.
Interesting. Well, why don't you start us off? Give us your least favorite first. Build your way up.
I don't know about least favorite, but I've got them in order. I definitely want to talk about them.
Okay, sure.
So the first one I've got is the most recent, at 2010, directed by Joseph Kosinski, Tron Legacy.
Whoa.
Which is a movie that, to a lot of people, and really the franchise in general, just sort of came and went.
I haven't seen it. Can you believe that?
But that's the thing with the original Tron, too, is people are either, like, in on Tron or they just never even bothered to get into it. But Tron Legacy is on there because it's the kind of movie that, like, there's some movies that I talk about where I would not watch them on DVD. I may watch them on Blu-ray, but, like, you really need to see it in a theater.
Right.
And that's the, like, optimal, like, if you're only going to see this movie once, you got to see Tron Legacy in a theater. Because it's not a great movie.
Okay.
But what it does do is it's atmospheric. And and people forget, did the soundtrack to Tron Legacy.
Was it Daft Punk?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was, like, a big deal at the time.
Yeah.
And it worked. Like, it fits. So, like, if you want to see a movie where you're living in that 3D Tron world with light cycles and destructo discs and shit like that, while Daft Punk plays in a dark theater where it's just you and the screen getting, like, absorbed into the Tron world for 2 hours. Like, that's the movie to see.
You know what I think it is? I think when it was first released, there was this, like, very open plan of, oh, there's a trilogy. And so the fact that the third one didn't happen, I think people think of it as almost like the Terminator Salvation. Like, they think of it as a failed plan.
Yeah.
Instead of just looking at it as one film by itself. But I just never got around to seeing it, but it always looked interesting to me.
You know what we did get, though, and this was really slept on? On Disney XD, I think it was, there was a Tron series.
Did you watch that?
I watched a couple episodes. It looked really good.
Wow. Disney XD had some good stuff, or has some good stuff.
Like that Spider-Man show from like 10 years ago that everyone talks about?
Is XD Gravity Falls? Maybe. Know. Yeah, Rebels, which was a good show. Well, that's very cool. I want to see that movie.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good watch.
But you say, like, it's a good, like, vibe.
It's a good vibe. Like the plot is just, like, it's basically Jeff Bridges, who's the guy who goes into the arcade machine. The original movie is still in the arcade machine. He's got a son. His son now goes in the arcade machine looking for his dad. Same kind of bullshit happens.
I think another thing people, like, the cultural touchstone from that film is not great looking CGI face Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
But you could read that as part of the story because he's in it. You know what I mean? Right. Like if any movie can get away with something looking computery.
Yeah, no, it totally works in the context of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'll check that out. Okay, well, I'll start with my most recent as well. This is from the year 2018, Upgrade. By Lee Whannell. Have you even heard of Upgrade?
No.
Upgrade came and went, and nobody cared but me. Upgrade is
this? Oh, no, I'm thinking of Downsize.
No. Upgrade is a guy in a sort of kind of post-apocalyptic future where... No, I'm sorry. It's not. It's a more of a dystopian future, not post-apocalyptic. It's just a few years ahead of us, and everything's automated. One day, the guy and his wife are in their self-driving car, and it crashes, and then they're, like, picked off. The wife is killed, and he is paralyzed. Mm-hmm. And then the crazy Elon Musk kind of billionaire is like, I can make you walk again by putting this chip into your spine.
Okay.
And basically then it's a lot like Venom. At the time, people were like, oh, what is this trying to be Venom? But I actually like it more than Venom because the chip speaks to him. So he'll be like talking to himself, but he's talking to the chip. And like there's amazing action in this movie, like where like he's trying to like it's a revenge story mostly. So he's trying to like track down the guys that killed his wife and see what the deal was.
Okay.
So he like sneaks into this one guy's house and like the guy starts beating the shit out of him. And then the chip is like, if you want, I can take over. You just have to give me consent. And he's like, all right, I give you consent. And then like the chip takes over the guy's body and the guy's just like perfect, like doing perfect martial arts. And like, but it's really great acting because his face is surprised by what his body is doing.
Right.
So he's like, oh God. But like, so it's funny. It's crazy action. It's dystopian. It's got a lot to say about order, free will and automation.
I thought you were going to say it's a lot to say about autoerotic asphyxiation.
I mean, it's, there's not really any stars. I think another thing that it had going against it was not only did it come out around the same time as Venom, the lead character looks like Tom Hardy. He's not Tom Hardy.
So that really makes it.
Yeah, everyone's like, is this Venom or is this what? But it's, and I didn't dislike Venom, but I this movie, it's just like, the thing with sci-fi is, you know, let's talk about this list in general. I had a hard time with this list because I realized all sci-fi is underrated. Like, there are movies that I thought I wanted to put on this list, but then I thought, you know what?
That's
an underrated movie, but it's not an underrated sci-fi movie, right? Yeah. This particular film, Upgraded, is an underrated sci-fi movie. If more sci-fi fans saw it, they would like this.
Mm.
Will it ever be breakthrough mainstream? No.
Probably not.
But I think...
I see people going to conventions of, like, the Upgrade
shit. Right, exactly. But I think this is a movie that maybe one day we'll find a reappraisal because it's actually just... It's just solid. It's a solid sci-fi yarn.
I would check that out.
Yeah, really cool. Upgrade. And it's produced by Blumhouse, but it's like... I forget, it's not...
That's one of the Blumhouse movies.
It's not Blum... It's some subsidiary of Blumhouse because it was their first attempt to be like, this is a Blumhouse sci-fi movie.
Okay.
Instead of a horror movie.
Like the Blumhouse sci-fi division.
Yeah, I think it was like BH Studios or something like that. I don't know. But it's a good little film, you know? And okay. I have my problems with Blumhouse, but, you know, they're out there making little films, and who else is, you know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going from the year 2010.
Whoa.
To the movie 2010.
Bum, bum.
2010, the year we made Contact, released in 1984.
Yes.
Directed by Peter Hyams.
You fucking bet. Can I tell you? This is on my honorable mentions list.
Okay, good.
The only reason, in fact...
The only sin this movie commits is being a sequel to 2001.
The only reason it's not on my list, by the way, is because a few years ago, I did an episode of underrated sequels. And okay. I put it on that list. So I was like, I don't want to repeat myself, but honestly, it deserves to be on this list because you're right. It is such an underrated sci-fi movie. And it's aesthetically, like... clearly a sequel, like it looks the same, the ships are the same, mm-hmm. but it's so not a Kubrick movie.
Yeah, it's got its own aesthetic. John Lithgow's in it, Roy Scheider's in it.
Right. I mean, the thing that makes it, I think, hard to swallow now is it takes place in a Cold War future that never happened. So right. Because it's postulating what if the Cold War continued way on into the future. Although way on in the future in this movie is 2010, which is already 12 years ago
for
us. But
it's the classic, like, okay, there's Americans in space, there's Russians in space.
Right.
We're going to take on a joint venture, and then we're going to look at this planet. And, like, I guess the only notable thing from that movie that would resonate in pop culture was that last scene where they get to Europa, and they're like, all these planets are yours, but, like, don't come here.
Yeah. I mean, I still think all the time, whenever I see something trippy, I still think, my God, it's full of stars.
Yeah.
The last transmission from Dave Poole. It's full of stars. It's awesome. It's awesome. It's Helen Mirren's in it.
Yeah,
she's great in it. Roy Scheider from Jaws is in it. It's one of his other great movies. I love it. I love the beginning scene where the Russian scientist comes up to Roy Scheider and he's like, "Let's play a game called The Truth. You and I will both tell the truth for 2 minutes straight." And it gives you this idea of like scientists are above the Cold War because like we're scientists. It's just a cool movie. One of the things that drags it down for me is knowing how much of a devout pedophile Arthur C. Clarke was. Like he was like a NAMBLA, I don't even deny it, pedophile. He was like people overblow it. Like, he went to, like, live on some island where it was not against the law. Like, he's a real piece of shit. And there's a scene where you see him, like, on a bench feeding ducks in this movie, like a little cameo.
Like, he's like, a fucking Alfred Hitchcock or something?
Yeah, I know.
Like,
it's very creepy. But you know who else I love in this movie? Balaban as the creator of Hal. And, like, he's, like, very invested in, like, what happened to Hal? What went wrong? It's really good, and it's really... If the first movie is all of these crazy questions, this movie comes with some answers. It puts the first movie into, I think, into a better sci-fi context, I think.
Yeah, because it doesn't outright give you a lot of those answers either. It's not like...
No, it doesn't.
It's not like, Hal just went to live with his family in Maine. Like, it's like...
Like, it's still... Like, you get the idea at the end of the first movie of, like, okay, the monolith... is God, maybe, and it's trying to help us evolve. And in this one, you get a little bit more of that, but it's still not drawn out for you.
Right. It's still more like, hey, you guys got to work together, but don't touch this planet.
And then it ends with that very interesting ending of, like, the gift that it gives us is another sun. So there's no darkness. Which,
but, like, wouldn't that fuck a lot of shit up? Yeah,
of course it would. But it's an interesting sci-fi idea. Like, that's what we needed.
There will be no darkness. I'm sure people on Earth are like, thanks.
Yeah, oh, okay, all right.
Thanks, I love it. Now I got to get, like, new fixtures for all my blinds.
Well, it took care of that vampire problem.
You're right.
2010, The Year We Made Contact. Great movie. And you know what? People were like, don't do it. Don't do it. Come on. This is too classic a movie to make a sequel to. And you know what?
They did it.
They did it with the exact amount of respect. Like, right. The ship is the same ship. We're going to use the same models, so it fits with it. But it's not the same actors. It's not the same style. It's not that Kubrickian coldness. Mm-hmm. It's much more of
it's
a
very
contemporary
80s.
Movie.
Very 80s style.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's awesome. That's a great pick. Okay, what do I have next? Okay, here's a good one. From the year 1999.
Ooh, 1999. Let me
try. I got two from this year as well.
I'll let me try and guess these.
Oh.
I'm just off year alone, I'm going to say Existenz.
Existenz is on there.
Existenz is
on
there.
But I also wrote my master's thesis on it, so you knew it was going to be on here.
Okay.
Existenz is on here. You know what? Let me talk about it. I wasn't going to talk about it. So Existenz, if you don't know, Existenz came out, I believe, 1 month prior to The Matrix.
Got completely blown away by The Matrix.
Right. Imagine The Matrix, but less action, more philosophy, and way more body horror.
Yeah.
In this film, there is a world where you get ports punched, like getting your earrings, like getting ears pierced, mm-hmm. ports punctured into your spine, and then, like, the video game console is, like, comes with, is, like, organic, mm-hmm. and, like, has skin, and it comes with a, like, an umbilical cord, and you plug it into your spine.
You think Cronenberg directed this?
Yeah. It's also, I think, it's one of the last movies he wrote all by himself, too. Mm. Although his new movie, I think, he is a remake of, like, his very first student film. But it's super Cronenbergian. It actually fits more in, it's like a sister film to Videodrome in a lot of ways.
Okay, yeah, I can see that.
But it's the perfect Russian doll thing of they play a video game and then they go inside a video game in the game and then they go in a game and like they just keep going recessively deeper. Mm-hmm. I guess a little bit like Inception, but the
whole point of it is like at a certain point, what's reality?
Yeah, and there's no like with Inception, you could like you can write down what's happening and kind of like follow it. Whereas in this movie, the whole point is that the further they go down the rabbit hole, the more fucked up things are. So it actually encapsulates the Jean Baudrillard philosophy more than The Matrix did, even though The Matrix, like, Neo has the Jean Baudrillard book in his desk. Because in The Matrix, Zion is real. And in Jean Baudrillard's philosophy and in the Existenz, once you create a fake world, everything gets fucked up. Like, there is no real to go back to. And it ends, there's a really striking ending of Existenz where they go back out and we're back out where we were in the very, very beginning. Mm-hmm. We're as far back out as we can be. And so you're like, okay, that was a game. But then some more shit happens. And then one character's like the last line in the movie is like, are we still in the game? And that's like nobody, there's no answer.
Right. Right?
That was the Jean Baudrillard simulation and simulacra philosophy. If we keep creating virtual realities,
where is it at?
Reality goes away. It's gone.
Right. And that's, like, they could certainly make a study. I mean, I'm sure there have been studies about that today with, like, social media.
Oh, yeah.
Where, like, to a lot of people, and we've all experienced this. Like, how many times have you been friends with someone, even just, like, casual acquaintances?
Yes.
And they're on social media for years.
Yeah.
Then one day, they're just like, I'm getting off social media.
Right.
And now they're just out of your life.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't know where they went. Like, you don't know what they're doing. Or you don't have their phone number because you've just been talking to them on Facebook. And now it's just like, unless you bump into them at the grocery store or something, like, they're just not in your life.
Well, how about these people that, like, someone's Instagram, they're like, oh, I'm in Hawaii, I'm here, I'm doing this, hashtag girl boss, and you're like, wow, they're doing great. And then you find out that they're, like, a crackhead. You know what I mean? Like, you find out, like, oh, their life has been miserable, but I've been buying this sort of version of their life, and they've been peddling their pyramid scheme bullshit to me.
Right, like, well, these people that pay money to take photos in, like, fake airplanes. Yeah.
Well, it's like in Jean Baudrillard's book, Simulation and Simulacra, he makes this interesting point where he says, like, in some ways, the realest place you can go to is Disneyland, because at least Disneyland admits to being constructed.
Right.
Disneyland has fake Main Street that's supposed to be like Main Street USA.
But you know it's fake.
But every town has fake Main Street that's meant to be harkening back to something, but we don't think of it as this is a simulation. We think of it as this is reality.
Right.
So Existence, it's a very trippy movie. It's very cool. It's got Jude Law in it. It's got Jennifer Jason Leigh. She's great in it. She plays like this young video game designer, but like she's almost like treated like as like an artist celebrity in it, like soothsayer, like very interesting. There's a, someone makes a gun out of teeth that shoots teeth. It's just crazy. And it's spelled lowercase e, capital X, I-S-T-N, capital Z.
You bet it is.
Because the 90s is all about that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sir. What's next on your list?
Well, this is going to be one of two movies from the early 90s directed by the same director.
Interesting. So interesting.
Directed by Stuart Gordon.
Huh.
1990. You want to take a wild guess?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I don't not, I'm not refusing to guess, but I don't know what it is.
Is Robot Jocks.
Robot Jocks. I have no idea what this is.
You should look up on your phone right now, Robot Jocks, spelled J-O-X.
Oh, of course, yes.
And look up the trailer for Robot Jocks. The best way I can describe this movie,
yeah,
and you're going to want to watch it immediately once I tell you, this is a precious moment I'm going to take in right now, in a time right before you know exactly what Robot Jocks is.
I'm seeing 1989. Oh, wait, release date 1990.
It is basically... Get this.
Yeah.
Rocky IV with mechs.
Now, where did you see this film? How'd you get in? How did this? Oh, I see Shout Factory has released it. That
says
a lot.
You bet Shout Factory released it.
So how did this movie come into your life?
It's one of those movies that I've just like seen along the way. Like people were talking about it online. I probably saw the Shout Factory thing about it. But like basically, and imagine the here's the cool thing about it, like these mechs that people get in. Imagine the robots, the robots from RoboCop, like the
big ones.
Yeah, the ones I'm blanking on the word to describe it.
The big like bipedal one that like isn't like humanoid.
Yeah, the one that I'm trying to describe the process. I'm blanking on what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say claymation. That's not it.
Oh, stop motion.
Stop motion. Yeah. So if you're a fan of the stop motion robots from RoboCop,
yeah,
this is that exact style.
Okay.
Where it's like you get a giant mech and then the whole mech fight is stop motion. That's so I awesome. Said it's Rocky IV with robots. I'm not lying, because basically what...
But it's pre-Rocky IV, actually.
No,
but
it isn't.
When's Rocky IV?
Rocky IV is mid-80s. That was with Ivan Drago.
Oh, right. I'm thinking Rocky V.
So the basic plot of this movie is the world has outlawed traditional war. So we're like, we're a more civilized society. We don't want to kill billions of people. So instead of fighting wars to take over like colonies and different pieces of land, we're going to just have like big mech battles. So the big conflict is between like the American alliance and like the Russian alliance.
Yeah.
And the Russian alliance fights the American alliance for, I think it's Alaska in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, something goes wrong, and the Russian robot accidentally, like, knocks the American robot into the stands because people are watching this.
Sure.
And kills, like, 300 people. And then there's a whole conspiracy about, like, oh, the Russians are cheating, and we can't do it. And then the... there's a big climactic battle, just like in Rocky IV, between the American and the Russian. And the American's about to kill the Russian and get the upper hand. And they're like, no, 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 we should not kill each other. Like, let's bump fists and walk away. Like,
so is this like bad good, or is it good good?
It's a little from column A, a little from column B.
Okay.
You have to kind of think of it as Godzilla logic, where like, there's going to be points in the movie where you're just waiting around.
Sure.
But then, like, it's worth it for the scenes with the Robot Jocks.
Okay. Okay. So Robot Jocks, 1990.
Very underrated. And again, it's there to be a spectacle. Like, the practical effects are really good. And if you've never seen it, like, they're going to wow you even more.
Wow. Okay. Do you know where it may be available currently?
I think it might just be on YouTube for free. It might just be one of those deals.
That doesn't surprise me. All right. I'm into it. Robot Jocks. All right, this is a robust list. Okay, from 1999, Bicentennial Man.
Wow, directed, Robin Williams movie. Yes,
directed by Chris Columbus. It was the last film he did right before, he did it right before Harry Potter, the first Harry Potter movie.
Yeah.
And it's, by the way, so it's an underrated sci-fi movie. It is a flawed movie. It is not a perfect movie. It's maudlin. Mm-hmm. It's overly dramatic.
You bet.
It's somehow both too long and too short because...
Yes.
Because it takes place over 200 years and there's a lot going on, but you also feel like, I wish I had more of what's going on in the heads of these characters instead of just like... Sometimes you just feel like you're just watching, like, didn't I just see this scene? And it's like, what's motivating it? But besides all that, it's just a really interesting idea. It's based on a story called The Positron Man by Isaac Asimov, who also is a creep. Not as creepy as Arthur C. Clarke, but would grope people and stuff. And it is Robin Williams plays a robot, and like this is a future where you have like household robots, right. And the patriarch of this family is Sam Neill from Jurassic Park, and he buys his family a robot, and he looks like a robot.
Yeah.
And but then he starts to be creative and make things and sort of evolve, and Sam Neill's like, okay, we go to the manufacturer, and the manufacturer's like, oh, this is a defect that happens sometimes. Send them back, we'll take care of it. And Sam Neill's like, no, like this is like great what's happening. Yeah. So Sam Neill's like, I'm going to teach you how to read. I'm going to teach you everything about life. And then, like, there's these constant upgrades. Like, then he gets an upgrade to have more facial expression. Mm-hmm. They have a wedding in the family, and he's wearing clothes. And the robot's like, if you don't mind, sir, I'd like to keep wearing clothes. And he's like, all right, keep wearing clothes if that's what you want to do. And then eventually, like, you know, he gets skin. And he just it's just a robot becoming a human. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, like any good sci-fi story, it makes you think about what it is to be a human and what that really means. And you see, because it's 200 years, you see generations of this family. Like, you know, there's this little girl, she's the Pepsi girl, Jesse Eisenberg's younger sister. But then she grows up and he's kind of in love with her, but she goes off and marries somebody else. But then, like, years go by and, like, he meets her granddaughter, who's also played by her, mm-hmm. and then he falls in love with her. And it's just like, it's this, you just keep jumping these generations. And it has a very sweet ending that will make you cry, and it's great sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked a lot on PCMC of like what sci-fi means and what sci-fi is, but you know, like porn, you know it when you see it. Like, this might not be the best film, but this is really good sci-fi.
Right.
And if you like sci-fi things like Asimov's Law of Robotics and sentience and wondering about like canon AI. You know, this also came out.
I think you were about to say what I was about to.
Yeah.
Which is, this came out around the boom of similar movies.
Right.
It was like that, AI, artificial intelligence.
Which also had Robin Williams in it.
Yes.
In a small role.
And K-Pax.
Yes, yes, yes. And, you know, AI is, I like AI a lot too. It's definitely a super underrated Spielberg film. Mm. But there's something about this that I just feel like people sleep on it, and it's...
You know what it was? Because in Robin Williams' career, this was kind of a down point for him. Because he hot off of Jack.
Yeah, yeah.
And then right after this was Patch Adams.
And...
Which I liked. Oh, I liked just fine, but then when I read the story of the real Patch Adams, and it was like nothing like the movie.
Really?
Yeah, like, have you ever seen the movie Patch Adams?
No.
Okay, so in the movie Patch Adams, it ends... I'm going to big spoilers for Patch Adams.
Sure.
There's, like, a girl that he... There's a woman that he loves in it. And Patch Adams is all about, like... Yeah, he's a doctor, but he's also, like, a clown. The whole, like, laughter is the best medicine thing. That's the whole Patch Adams thing. At the end of the movie, one of the people kills the woman he loves, and he's thinking about, like, giving up, but then, like, he doesn't. He puts on his red nose, and he keeps going at it.
Oh, my God.
But that never happened in real life.
Wow. That's so weird.
Nobody, like, his girlfriend didn't die. Like, no person killed her. Like.
See, I would have thought that had to be real because it's so stupid.
Right.
Like they just added that. Well, that's terrible. Well, you know, speaking of Robin Williams, I think, is a good actor. And he was also very good at dramatic roles. this movie has tone issues more than anything. I think this movie was like, okay, this is Robin Williams, it's gonna be funny, but Robin Williams himself is not even trying to be funny. He's playing it fairly straight.
No, I think the studio wanted a Mrs. Doubtfire movie.
Right, right. It's Mrs. Doubtfire, but she's a robot, and that's not at all what Chris Columbus gave them.
Right.
And as much as I like the movie, any attempts at comedy really fall flat. It should just be a sci-fi drama. Like, right. Don't... Like, they throw in comedic shit, and it's just like, boy, does this... This is not fitting very well.
No.
But Bicentennial Man from 1999. Two from 1999 right there.
Two from 99. And speaking of two, we got another from Stuart Gordon.
A person I have no idea who that is.
From 1992, Fortress, starring Christopher Lambert.
I've heard of this one. And I haven't seen it, though.
And you know who plays the villain? You're going to love it.
No.
Kurtwood Smith.
Really?
Yeah. So Fortress is a movie where basically we live in a dystopian future.
You bet.
Like so many sci-fi movies. Where you're only allowed one kid. And if your wife has another kid, you get thrown in jail. They take the baby. The
whole okay.
So, but not only do you get thrown in jail, Christopher Lambert gets thrown in a jail that's an underground fortress. So you get taken like I don't know, like 10 miles down into the earth.
Yeah.
And basically Christopher Lambert is on a quest to break out of this jail and find his wife and run away with her so they can have, you know, they can have their child.
Okay. Okay.
And along the way, like there's different like interesting prisoners that he meets.
Yeah.
Kurtwood Smith has this subplot about like he's using technology that the evil corporation who owns the prison is gaining from fetuses to like upgrade his body.
Interesting. That sounds like a Christian Wright kind of a conceit.
It's kind of a real wild movie, but they did a sequel to it in like 1999 that went like, I don't know if it went right to video or what, but it was definitely not as good. Jeffrey Combs is in it, which is nice.
Is this better or worse than Robot Jocks?
Ooh, I would say it's better than Robot Jocks. But okay. If you're really into seeing the Robot Jocks like stop motion, yeah, then obviously you're going to be more into Robot Jocks.
Okay.
But I think there's more going on in Fortress.
Yeah, so have you seen other films by Stuart Gordon?
I'm
unfamiliar with the cinema of Stuart Gordon.
You know what? Let me look him up really quick. I think he's done some other notable stuff.
You know, I feel like there was a time
where like you got one notable movie and then you did a bunch of other like weird, right, underrated shit.
But even if you like were under the radar and did kind of schlocky stuff, there was still a pride to it. Whereas I feel like what you see now from like the sci-fi movies is like we're just gonna do fake knockoffs of hits. We're just gonna do Atlantic Rim.
Oh, you know what he did?
What?
Directed and wrote Reanimator.
Wow. Okay. Yes, of course.
That makes more sense Stuart now. Gordon. Jeffrey Combs.
Yes, 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 yes. Now the name's ringing a bell.
He also wrote Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Oh, wait. Yes, because the original script for Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is way weirder.
That's right.
It was called Teeny Weenies.
He did, I'm looking for anything else notable.
Stuart Gordon. Fuck. Yes. Reanimator is good.
Reanimator is a classic. He directed a couple episodes of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, the TV show.
You bet he did.
I did an episode of Masters of Horror.
Okay.
Fear Itself. Something called The Wonderful Ice Cream Suit.
All right.
Space Truckers. Directed The Pit and the Pendulum.
I remember Space Truckers. That was an HBO film with
Dennis Hopper?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. Yeah, directed Dennis Hopper.
Was it 95? 96.
Charles Dan. Oh, yes, I do. Oh, wow.
Space Truckers.
Wow. This is like
Saturday night, 8 p.m.
This is like an unlocked memory.
Yeah.
That's like remembering Bubba Hotep or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. By the way, I saw the Bubba Hotep prequel that just came out, and it was all right.
Excuse me?
The Bubba Hotep prequel, Elvis, by Baz Luhrmann.
Oh, okay.
It was okay. There were no mummies in it, but it was all right.
I don't want to see that movie just because I don't like Elvis.
No, okay.
And then I saw the trailer and the guy playing Elvis, and I was like, I don't like this guy playing Elvis.
It's
just something about his face. I don't like it.
I liked it, but talking about talking a lot and saying nothing. Because
if they really wanted to talk about Elvis, they would have an honest conversation and it would be a whole different movie.
No, but this movie has things where, like, B.B. King comes up to Elvis and is like, hey, man, I like you a lot. I have no problems with you. And then looks into the...
What?
Yeah, and then, like, looks at the camera and goes, us black people like him, so no need to feel upset about anything. It, you know, this movie was absolutely sanctioned by his family, and that already... Yeah. That tells you a lot. Because it completely glosses over any of his cultural appropriation.
Him marrying a child.
Him, yeah, right. They describe his wife as, like, a pretty teenager. It's like, she was, like, a child when he met. But anyway. But it was still fun. I like Elvis, so it was,
also,
it was,
like,
fun.
4 years too late on the trend of, like, musical biopics.
But no, it's more like in the new trend of, like, Rocket Man. Like, where it's like, it's a biopic, but it's like, it's just a romp. Like,
Rocket Man's been the best of these kinds of movies.
Rocket Man is way, way, way better than Elvis. But Elvis, if you like Elvis, it is interesting.
Okay.
You know, it's a Baz Luhrmann movie, so it's style over substance, you know.
That's true.
Actually, the best... I was saying, me and Jen saw it, and we were saying the best performance in it is, oh, what's this guy's name? This guy who plays Little Richard, and he sings...
I don't doubt it.
He sings Tutti Frutti, and I was like, that was the best number in the movie, Tutti Frutti.
Yeah, give me... Yeah, I want a Little Richard movie. Fuck Elvis.
Yeah.
Little Richard is the real king of rock and roll.
You fucking bet he is. You fucking bet he is.
If no one's ever seen... Listen, if you just know Little Richard as the weird fey talking head on a lot of, like, E! True Hollywood stories,
yelling at Joey Gladstone. Shut up, Joey.
Yeah. Like, because I feel like he's one of those... Little Richard's one of those guys that, like, if people don't know the context,
right,
then you could easily just see him as, like, oh, that guy from the tabloids or whatever.
Right, right, right.
From, like, the 90s.
Right. If you knew him from the 90s, like, you knew him as, like, a caricature of himself.
Right.
Yeah, young Little Richard is different. And by the way, he's played in the film Elvis by Alton Mason, who's just so awesome in it. Tutti Frutti, maybe one of the best rock and roll songs ever, because it's about nothing, but it's great. And the whole, like, Wah Mama Luma, Wah Bam, like, it's just,
it's nothing.
It's nothing, but it's great. Anyway, what the hell are we talking about? Sci-fi movies? Oh, okay. So, were you done with
Fortress?
Okay, Kurtwood Smith,
great villain,
great in RoboCop.
Yeah.
Side note: did you see the trailer that came out yesterday for the new RoboCop video game?
No.
It looks... It doesn't look like a premium game. It's definitely gonna be one of those, like, $40 short games. Yeah. But it looks better than I thought it was gonna be.
Okay.
It looks like it's a first person. It looks like what you want it to be. And I'm
cool.
I'm excited about it. I'm like, fuck, yes, let's do this.
A RoboCop game.
Like just, I'm walking around dystopian Detroit, like, shooting punks. That's all I've ever wanted. Okay, so let's see. I've done three already. Upgrade, Existenz, and Bicentennial Man. I have two left, plus some honorable mentions.
Okay, let's see if I can guess.
Well, this is from the year
1998. Is this animated?
No, it is not. This is one I've talked about a lot just in life. From the year 1998, directed by Stephen Hopkins, I'm talking about Lost in Space. Starring William Hurt.
And Joey.
Yes. Yeah. Matt LeBlanc.
I like the scene where he goes up to Will Robinson and he's like, how you doing?
And incredible performance by Gary Oldman as Dr. Smith.
Yeah, Gary Oldman.
He's Dr. Smith in it, being the normal Dr. Smith, but he also is the film's villain.
Right.
In a really scary way, like, he becomes a spider monster.
Yeah, I haven't seen this movie in years, but I do remember seeing it on VHS. It was like one of those, like, rainy day in middle school. And, like, oh, we got these VHS tapes.
Revisit it, my friend. Because I revisited it about 2 years ago. I was, like, sick one day. And I was, like, I saw it on one of the streamers. And I was, like, I'm going to fucking watch. Because I saw it in the theater in 1998.
Yeah.
And I loved it. And,
I think I was going to see it in the theater. I picked Jungle to Jungle instead.
We all make choices in this world. It's 1998. So it's updated.
Yeah.
It's got CG that's good for 1998. Not great. There's, like, a cool, like, monkey alien in it. It's got Lacey Chabert in it as the youngest sister.
Yeah,
it's got it's got the funness of the show and the lightness of the show, but it's not super campy, but it's also not taking itself seriously at all.
Yeah.
And it's just a fun adventure. You know, they take all the elements that are there in the show and they make them better. You know, Matt LeBlanc's character on the show was like handsome pilot guy, and in this they make him kind of an asshole.
They amp him up a little,
right? And he's always hitting on the oldest daughter, and
that's what I remember of the movie, is that it's sort of like whatever the original Lost in Space was, but like we're gonna take every character and dial them up to like 11.
Right And the robot is its own design, but they retained the voice of the robot from the show.
That's good,
which was a smart move. Because he does the, you know, he obviously does the Danger Will Robinson. Mm-hmm. That's also the same robot that was in Forbidden Planet.
Yes.
Just the exact same fucking prop. It is good. I mean, I look at it now and I'm like, you know what? These designs are cool. I like the way the outfits look. I like the way the aliens look. I like the way their ship looks. It's just a sort of oval kind of like bluish purpley thing. It's very cool. It's very cool and completely slept on.
Oh, yeah. Nobody talks about it.
At all.
Well, that was also, again, a weird period where there was a crop of family sci-fi movies coming out. And people just were not having it. Like, remember My Favorite Martian?
Yeah.
Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah. It was a lot of, like, let's remake. Because before remade
That Darn Cat?
Yeah. Before comic books became the thing that was being completely pilfered.
The 60s were being pilfered.
Yeah, and it was TV shows, adaptations of TV shows. You know, like from
Mr. Magoo?
Yeah, Brady Bunch. And you know what I mean? Like,
although the Brady Bunch was like one of the only successful ones because they completely sidestepped everything by just being a parody.
Right, they were just like, we'd make fun of ourselves. Yeah, it's really good. I mean, like, if you have any love for the original series, it plays to your fan expectations, but does it well. I mean, Dr. Smith has this corny catchphrase in the show where he goes, "Never fear, Smith is here." And Gary Oldman delivers that line with true menace, where it's like, oh, I'm creeped out by this. And he's you know, in the show, he's just this creepy guy who's a stowaway, and he's gonna fuck shit up. He seems...
But in the movie, again, he's ramped up to 11.
He's like going to kill people. Yeah, he's the villain. And he gets bit by this space spider. So he becomes... and there's like alternate... There's like timelines and future and like just really interesting shit. And what's sad to me is, you know, they set it up to be like, let's do 5 more. And they never did. And I think it could have been an awesome series. I wish they had done more. Now there's a Netflix series, which I watched the first season and I liked, but I haven't stepped back into it. But it kind
of like came in, like, are they doing any more of that?
They did, I think, a second or third season. But it doesn't have the fun. It's taking itself seriously, which is okay. The 98 movie has fun. It's having fun with itself.
Right.
What do you have? You've done how many so far?
I'm on to my last one.
Okay. Can you recap what you've done so far?
I've got Tron Legacy, 2010, Robot Jocks, and Fortress.
Do you have any honorable mentions?
I do not.
Okay. Go right to your first, sir.
This is from 1976.
1976.
Directed by Michael Anderson.
Okay.
You have no clue what this is.
It's all ringing bells.
Okay. I'm going to give you the lead actor.
Okay. We're playing the Leonard Maltin game.
We are playing the Leonard Maltin game from Doug Loves Movies, which is a podcast I don't even know if it exists anymore.
Probably.
The lead actor is Michael York.
Who's the second lead? Let's go down the IMDb.
Yeah, let me, you know what? Let me go. We'll do the Wikipedia. Maybe 1 second.
76.
Farrah Fawcett is in this.
Ah, fuck. What is it?
It's Logan's Run.
Logan's
Run from 1976, directed by Michael Anderson. Logan's Run kind of gets lost in the shuffle a lot of the time.
Right, I was just about to challenge you a little bit, because I feel like this is a well-remembered movie. But I don't know if younger people give a shit about it now.
Exactly. Like, I feel like Logan's Run, if you talk to, like, a real sci-fi, like, aficionado,
yeah,
they'll be like, oh, yeah, Logan's Run. But I don't think it has the resonance that, like, other...
Yeah, you know,
other movies of that type have. And I can see why, because my thing with Logan Run, and this is why I think it's underrated, is because it's got a lot of really great ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But in the movie, once they leave the dome, you could walk out and, like, that's the end of the movie for me.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think, and I, you know, I'm not an old man who shakes his hat at the sun, but I sometimes wonder if there's a dividing line problem in terms of production design. Like, anything pre-Star, like, Star Wars is as far as the average person can go, but once it looks like...
Well, Doctor Who is great, because there are some people who will not go
immediately
back.
Turn off, right, immediately turn off.
But, like, if you give that stuff a chance, it could be, like, really charming and warm.
Like, right. But you're like, no, it looks too much like a guy in a suit, so I'm done with it.
Yeah.
And some people, like, they cannot get to the writing. They cannot get over that.
Right.
And but Logan's Run, I think, is one of them, because I think Logan's Run, it doesn't really hold up in terms of...
No, I mean, it looks good for the time.
Right, but like, it's not... You don't look at it now...
It looks 70s.
Exactly.
But let's wind it back a little for people who don't know what Logan's Run is.
Yeah.
Basically, there's a utopian society, although there's, like, dark undertones, where basically... Right. Everyone lives in a giant domed world city thing. Like we all live on Earth, but like the people in this area live in like a giant domed city. And in that domed city, you get whatever you want. It's paradise. You can call on people for sex, like whenever you want. But the catch is when you turn 30, there's these like crystals in your hand.
Yeah.
And like when your crystal flashes red, you have to go to Carousel, which is this ceremony where you're led to believe that you get renewed. It's like a renewal ceremony where, like, okay, everyone who's, you know, turned 30 today, everyone get in a circle. We're going to make you fly up into the sky and then you explode.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, yay, they're renewed. But in reality, they're just murdering people. It's okay. Like the high elites murdering people. And there's these people called runners who, when they're 30... They're like, no, I don't want to die when I'm 30. I'm going to fucking try and escape.
Yeah.
And this guy, Logan, plays one of the chasers who is, you know, their job is to catch the runners and bring them in.
Yeah.
He gets mixed up with this girl who's trying to run, and then they end up escaping together.
Yeah.
And they get out of the dome. And the big flaw of the movie is once they get out of the dome, the interest level goes from, like, here to down here.
Because how much is left in the film after they get out?
I would say, like... almost half the movie.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Because basically once they get out, it's like, okay, you're still being chased, but it's like all the interesting stuff was in the city.
Okay, yeah.
So once they get out, it's like now we're just like running around the woods being chased and like looking for paradise and trying to like escape past this like this like fake border.
See, that's what I think is great about, and this isn't on my list, but it could be, THX 1138.
Yeah.
That one is all about the run, and then, like, the last shot, they're above ground, and you just see them in a desert, and that's it. Like, it's, you don't... The second the character escapes, it's like, all right, you don't need to know what happens now.
Right, they escaped. That was the goal, and they did it.
Yeah. I'm sure it's gonna be shitty on the surface, but whatever.
Now, there
it's
was...
It's like that idea of, like, don't you deserve to be shitty? Like, don't you deserve to have a true human life where things suck?
Right.
You know?
Now, there was a Logan's Run TV show. Where they basically took the plot of the movie and...
I've never seen this.
It's...
Lorenzo Lama?
No. This came out in the 70s as well.
Okay.
And
Scott Bakula.
No. And it only lasted... It's one of those shows that like, only lasted like 14 episodes or something.
Okay.
But I think they're all
like the Planet of the Apes show.
Yeah, exactly like the Planet of the Apes show.
Yeah.
And that had a little more to it where like every week like... It's him, the girl, and like their android companion that they threw in for the show. But the interesting thing with the series is that a lot of the writers on the Logan's Run TV show came over from Star Trek.
Oh, okay.
So you got like, DC Fontana, you got like, all these people, you know, Harlan Ellison, like coming over.
Cool.
So like if you want more, if you're like a fan of like the original series Star Trek, like you might want to check out the Logan's Run series to get like a little taste more of that.
Is it all the running, or is it after... Is it retell the movie, or is it like, here's him outside?
It kind of retells the movie in the first episode.
Oh, okay.
And then every other episode is them running, but it's sort of like every episode is them wandering into a new town.
Oh, okay. That's cool. I like that. Very cool. Logan's Run. Very, very solid list, and with a lot of titles I got to go and look up myself.
Yeah.
Very excited. So I'm at my last one, but let me give you a few honorable mentions. Yeah. I said 2010, the year we made contact. That's on your list. I just mentioned THX 1138. This one I didn't put on my list because I didn't want to be annoying.
Okay.
But I put Solo, A Star Wars Story.
Okay.
It's a very good, fun Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
It's got no Jedis. It's got no robes. It's got no magic. It's a fun space.
Yeah.
It's a space pirate doing fun things.
Get over the fact that it's a prequel.
Yeah, and get over the fact that it's not Harrison Ford. I mean, honestly, to
me, he does a good job. Like, for all this talk when it came out of, yeah, like, oh, like, oh, we, I mean, because before it came out, there was all this hoopla and rumor.
We had to give him an acting coach.
Yeah, we had to, like, hire an acting coach for him on the set. Oh, this is going downhill. Yeah. Like, we got, it's like, no, you did fine.
Yeah, he does
like,
a great job. He's totally fine. No, the thing that cursed that movie was the anger over The Last Jedi was still very prevalent.
Yeah.
And it was like you had that bitter taste in a lot of people's mouths. And then it was like, here's another Star Wars movie 6 months later. And people were like, on principle, not seeing it. But really, if you look at it, it's very much on par with the TV stuff they're doing now.
Oh, yeah. My only real knock with the Solo movie is that cinematography-wise, it's very visibly dark, and I don't know why.
Well, it's very Ron Howard, and I don't mean to put the man down. They made a choice. It's a Ron Howard's, I think, never. I don't want to shit on Ron Howard.
Ron Howard's more. He's more of a gun for hire than I think people realize.
Yes. If he weren't a child star that you know, you would not be like, oh, Ron Howard.
Right.
He's a good director. He's a serviceable director. But he doesn't have an aesthetic. He's not like an auteur where you'd be like, oh, that looks like a Ron Howard movie. You know what I mean? Like,
well, he's one of these guys that I think he had his moment and he's been riding that moment. Like, Apollo 13 was his moment.
Right.
Where it was like the big blockbuster that he'd been waiting to get.
But I wouldn't say Solo looks bad. I mean, no. There's some, and there's cool puppets in it. There's what's her name? Lady, oh God, there's this like slug snake.
Oh yeah, in the beginning of the movie.
Alien lady who's just a big puppet, and it's awesome. It's very good.
There's heists in it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, like people did not see it on principle, and it's like, do yourself a favor and see it. You're gonna like it.
Woody Harrelson's in it and does a great job.
Yeah, like, as a new character.
Right.
That's like, okay, this is...
an interesting new character, because you're constantly wondering, like, is he a good guy, is he a bad guy?
Right, right.
You learn a little bit more about him, he's got his wife that dies, like...
Right. Yeah, you get some Chewbacca backstory, it's a decent movie. But anyway, let's get to my number one.
Yeah.
This is a movie...
Okay.
...that people shit on.
Oh, what year was this?
Constantly. I'm not going to tell you, because you'll know exactly what it is the second I say it.
Okay.
From 1979, Star Trek The Motion Picture. Yeah. A completely underrated movie, often referred to as the bad one. People will tell you to your face, oh, don't watch that one. That one's garbage. Go right to two. And it's like, is it perfect? No. Is it oddly cold? Yes. Is it?
It takes more inspiration from 2001 than from Star Wars.
Exactly. It may have been greenlit because of Star Wars, but it's way more trying to be like 2001. Like Spock's, when Spock is on that floating chair and he like goes into the eye of the thing, that's so 2001. But it's a really good sci-fi movie.
And Paramount Plus.
It's just not fun.
Right.
It's not fun.
No, there's like people getting fucked up in transporters. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And
there's this weird scene. It's a cool scene, but like where there's like an electric strike going through
That's very cool. And the but it's a cool
shot because it's like you could tell they're taking frames out of the film. Yeah.
The villain, or the antagonistic element is a shit cloud.
Yeah.
It's like a, and it's like, it's kind of like the monolith. And I guess a lot of people, it's too abstract for people, because it's just like, they're like just traveling into it. But it's really good sci-fi. I also think it suffers a little bit of like what many years later The Last Jedi would suffer from, which is, I don't like that the lead character that I love is not on their A-game. Because in it, Kirk is very like, craven and making really rash decisions and kind of looks weak and out of touch. And like, there's a lot of like McCoy being like, why are you doing this? Like he takes over the ship from its captain, which another pedophile that comes up in today's episode, the father from Seventh Heaven, is Decker, who's the captain of the Enterprise. But you know, Kirk comes in and he's like, because
I'm
this
the captain now.
Yeah, because this is important admission. This is an important mission. I'm taking command. And he's kind of like, but it's also this weird victory lap because it's like the show came out, had three seasons, became way popular in syndication, and now here's the movie, and we're taking ourselves so serious now.
Oh, the establishing, the like 12-minute establishing shot
of the Enterprise,
which I'm sure looks.
I love it.
Yeah, like, I'm sure even in a theater.
And that theme, the Jerry Goldsmith theme,
yeah,
is just incredible.
And on, we were talking about Paramount Plus before, they just released on Paramount Plus like this like ultimate remastered like director's cut.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they like really cleaned all of it up and added new scenes.
Yeah,
and
yeah. Look, it's not a perfect movie, but I really hate them. Even when I was a kid, my dad was a Star Trek fan and we had them all on VHS and we didn't have one. And maybe I wouldn't have liked it as a kid, but I will always resent people being like, oh, that's the bad one. And it's like,
no, like, it's there not. Are great ones, there are good ones, and like, there are ones that aren't that good. Right.
Like, obviously, the second movie is, like, super fun. Kirk's being as Kirk as he could be.
Yeah.
You've got the Spock and Kirk relationship is very, very at the center of it. Like, it's really the heart of things. Also, they update the outfits in the second one. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't like the aesthetic of the first one. I kind of do. It kind of feels Logan's runny a little bit. It's all very pale future.
Well, this is before they settled on the, like...
The red maroon.
The red, yeah.
Yeah. Which, how'd you feel about Anson Mount in the maroon?
See, that's good fan service.
That is good fan service.
Where it's like, we're not going to point it out, but, like, you know what this is if you know what this is.
Spoiler alerts for Strange New Worlds.
But, yeah, like, this idea that the Star Trek movies... That it's not just a sliding scale.
Or
it's,
they say, like, the even ones are the only good ones?
No, here's how it breaks down for me in terms of, like, the original set of movies. 2 and 6 are the best.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think 3... One is good. 3 is good. 4 is good. 5... The only one that's really, like, not good is 5.
That's the one where they find God, right?
Yeah.
As a little kid, I liked it.
Spock's half-brother, Cybok.
Yeah, I remember liking that as a kid.
But that's the thing. Even in that movie, like, there are some things to like about it. Like, I like the I like the scene where they finally confront the fake god entity.
Yeah.
And he's like, tell me more about this starship.
Yeah.
And Kirk's just like, what does God need of a starship?
Right, right.
And like, Jim, don't talk to God like that. But what does God need of a starship? Then they turn to Spock and he's like, it is a logical question. Like,
yeah. Here's a controversial statement. I think 4 is overrated. I think 4 is good. There's good stuff in it.
There's a lot of
corny shit in it.
Yeah.
There's a lot
Well, that's the one that, like, if we're taking the original movie
It's just
series,
a comedy.
Right, like, this is the one that's light. They wanted to do a purposefully light one.
Right.
After doing, like, a couple of real heavy ones.
Yeah.
Because remember, 2, 3, and 4 are really, like, a trilogy.
Yes,
because Spock, spoiler alert for Wrath of Khan... Spock dies at the end, and the next movie is The Search for Spock, where they go to the Genesis planet to get him back and resurrect him.
Have you seen that there's Hallmark made a Spock dying tree ornament?
Yeah.
Of, like, the glass in between them?
Because that used to be a big thing. I think they still do it, where, like, every year they put out a new Star Trek ornament.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Every that's still a big thing with
but
Hallmark.
But, yeah, some of them were a little questionable. It's
like remember your Spock favorite moment? Your
tree.
You remember crying? And that's where the great line, I am and always will be your friend.
Yeah.
Well, damn it, I think we did it. We did a great list of sci-fi movies. If you haven't seen these films, go out and check them out, especially if you're a sci-fi nerd like we are.
Check them out.
This is Pop Culture Manchildren. We are available anywhere podcasts are found, including on YouTube now.
Oh.
You can also find us, on Instagram and Facebook. You Google us, you'll find us all over the goddamn web. We come out every Wednesday and we tackle new topics, we tackle new texts, we tackle old shows, we tackle old movies, we tackle video games, we do list shows like the one you just heard. It is all about pop culture ephemera, but in a non-toxic way. We're not about hate here. You get that, you motherfuckers?
Yeah.
Vin, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, I love it.
We end the episode by saying...
Go bye-bye.